finally, Zach has reached that point. He finished Battleground, book 17 of Jim Butcher's The Dresden Files. And today, we're going to talk full spoil about these last two books and the whole series. Did we finally convert you, Zach?
No.
Hi there, and welcome to Fantasy for the Ages, the show where a father and son get together and talk about fantasy, science fiction, and other nerdy things we enjoy. Today, full spoil episode on the Dresden Files. Zach has been working through these books, and he's finally done. He's recently finished book 16, Peace Talks, book 17, Battleground, and we're going to talk about these books and anything we want from the series so far with full spoils today. So, if you haven't read these, go away. This is the wrong episode for you to watch.
Now, as a quick fun disclaimer for my sake and for anyone who's been kind of with me on my journey along the way, I'm going to do my best not to talk about most of my issues with this series. I think they're well documented, the things that I don't really like about this series. So instead, That's I'm true. Going to focus on things that I did enjoy. Yay. And talk about some of the implications, full spoil, various things, and just try to have a conversation that you will enjoy, Dad.
I like that. All right. And hopefully our followers will enjoy that too. Speaking of, just this week, we crossed the 1,000 subscriber threshold on YouTube. So welcome, everyone. Thank you for having faith in us and continuing to enjoy our content.
It is amazing to be 200 times more popular than I thought we ever would be. So I'll take it.
And, you know, if you're here now watching this episode and you aren't a subscriber, it's not too late. Hop on the bandwagon, click like on this episode and click subscribe and check out all the content we keep bringing out here today. We're having some fun still and we're happy to share it with you. So fun. I have fun reading the Dresden Files. You, as you said, have some issues, but you've also found some things to have fun with.
Yeah, depending on the book, I've enjoyed the time. And especially as you get into some of the later books, they tend to be more enjoyable than they are not.
Now, Peace Talks and Battleground, they're really one book. It's just too big to have, based on how all the Dresden File books were put out. It would have been double the size, more than double the size of any of the previous books.
You're not wrong. However, I'm going to say something that you might find a little bit contentious.
Okay, go for it.
As a standalone book, Peace Talks works better for a standalone Dresden book than Battleground does.
Battleground, well, this is where I say it can't be two standalone books because Battleground isn't a book. Battleground is one big action scene.
Well, and that's the fun thing. Peace Talks does have its own self-contained little thing, but it also like leads you into Battleground. But because it has that self-contained thing, it wraps that up. It wraps Thomas up. It works. Battleground really doesn't without Peace Talks.
Yeah. Peace Talks has its own...
works as its own story because the whole Thomas arc and what's up with him and needing to get him away, breaking him out, basically, that is its own self-contained little Dresden story.
Okay.
And it has other elements and hints towards other things, and that definite break-in with Ethneo, I don't know how you say names.
That works for me.
Definitely leads into where Battleground's going, but you could stop at the end of Peace Talks and be like, yeah, that was a book. There are unanswered questions, but it's because there's more to this series, not because this book is not done.
Something I love about Peace Talks and Battleground is both these books together deliver on so many things that have been laid out there over the last 17 books. Well, 15 books before you get to these two. There's just so many things that come to fruition now. Some of them are like, oh, of course. Some of them that were like, whoa. I mean, that's cool, but, you know, didn't necessarily see some of these things coming. What are some of the things in here? Because that's one of your things you've kind of not been on board with Dresden Files is you found it a little too predictable at times. Mm-hmm. Things weren't as shocking to you. But Are there some in here this time where when you read them, you were like, okay, that was cool. I didn't necessarily predict that.
There were a lot of cool moments, but to me, it was a lot of like, there are cool big action sequence moments, not cool, I super didn't see that coming moments. Possibly the closest would be Marconi actually having picked up one of the coins. And that's something where it like makes a lot of sense. Yeah, duh. But at the same time, it's like you were kind of hoping for the human mobster who's getting in all this to be almost a Murphy character where you were toe-to-toe with all these supernatural elements with just being human. And so it was almost a letdown for me to see, no, he did actually go a supernatural route. But then it was like, okay, no, it makes sense. And it does mean he is more formidable than he was.
Now, we did throw it out there the last time we talked about Dresden Files, how to pronounce Marcone, Marconi, and it was confirmed it's Marcone.
So, but it's Johnny Marconi.
No, it's not. Yeah, it is Marcone, for the record. Thank you, Gentle Giant Jason. That was one of the moments where, yeah, absolutely. It's like, whoa. Oh, I know when he did that. But whoa, you know, to have it revealed like that was pretty cool. Obviously, you know, well, what are some of the big moments in here that really, you know, you're like, oh, cool. You know, what are they?
We've got Dracula and a graveyard fight. We've got giants and quicksand. We've got, oops, Murphy's dead.
Man, more than oops. More, I mean, criminy.
We've got arming the citizens of Chicago to a people's army. We've got the knights standing tall, specifically of the cross. They do some good stuff, and lightsabers can stand up against the will of titans.
Now, do you want to go to Chicago and explore the inside of the cloud bean?
I don't need to explore the inside of the cloud gate, aka the bean. I fully expect that there's not an arsenal inside of there.
But
if cool. there is...
Cool. Chicago doesn't need more guns.
Good for them. I don't know. Chicago's one of those places where, like, I simultaneously would love to visit at some point, but it's low on my bucket list of places to visit.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up there. It's not a bad place to visit, but it's not a great place to visit.
I think my biggest problem is, like, I like cities, but I also like the coastal vibe. And Chicago is as far from coastal as you can get.
It has Lake Michigan. Which
that is not a coast. That is a lake.
Yes, but it has a vibe. It's got a little surf.
No, having a coast and having a coastal vibe are two different things.
Well, that's true.
And the eastern and the western coasts of the U.S. have certain vibes. They're different from each other, but they have a certain vibe to how they are that is very different from central.
Now, you're not far from the Gulf Coast. Does that give a vibe that you like? Okay.
Yeah. At least enough. That being
said, you're dissing on Lake Michigan. I gotcha. Okay.
For all of my Texas people who are around, I live in Austin, Texas, and that is a place that most of Texas does not claim. I'm okay with that because it's probably the place in Texas I like the most.
Man, I have told people, my son lives in Texas. We're at Austin. And sometimes the reaction is, ooh. Because that's not real Texas, apparently.
But it's okay. Most of the people that I really enjoy spending time with, if they hear what part of Texas, they go Austin, and they go, oh, okay, it's the other side of that coin.
Yeah. So there's so many good things in these two books from my perspective, and I enjoy reading these books. Again, so many payoffs, but there's some great scenes that, you know, pull some real things off here. You know, we've got that meeting in Peace Talks, the actual Peace Talk that goes horrifically bad.
Yep.
And we get the introduction of that big old titan with powers that go well beyond. I mean, Queen Mab is just chucked through a wall. Nobody does that. What the heck?
Well, she does that, apparently.
Yeah. And there you know, this is not going to be just par for the course Dresden Files. This is going to be something different. And, you know, that was cool. So many different little plot lines that are still tied into all of this. You mentioned Murphy dying. That was foreshadowed very clearly a little earlier in the book, but even earlier in the series. I mean,
it had been building a little bit.
Shooting her has been a schmuck for books and books and books.
Can we just talk about how awkward it's going to be when he has to go home to his wife, who used to be his sister-in-law, who is Murphy's sister, and go, "Hey, I shot your sister, my ex-wife. She's dead. Sorry?"
Really? That connection I don't remember. I'd have to look into that again. Really?
Unless I'm misremembering which person, which very possible I just put the two annoying
people as
the same person. I think their names both started with R, so that's why my brain put them together.
Agent Rudolph, isn't that his name?
Yeah.
And I don't think that's her ex-husband, but I'll look this up now. But, you know, he had already earlier in the book demonstrated poor trigger discipline. It was highlighted.
No, you're right. Their name is Richard, and so my brain always put the R together because they're both dick cops.
Well, yeah, but for totally different reasons.
They're about the same reason that they're dick cops.
Rudolph is the one who was part of Special Investigations way back when, but never wanted to be in it.
IA. He became the Internal Affairs guy.
Yeah, he turned on them. He took advantage of opportunities to advance himself and throw other cops under the bus. He rejected, I mean, his psyche could not handle, even way back in the early books, the ideas of like werewolves. What? No, can't be, you know, and he's practically having a mental break. So he ends up out of that division. And then he's against them every time that he runs across them. He's throwing up roadblocks just because he can't accept these things. And then we have him totally freaking out and therefore ending up accidentally killing Murphy. It's like, are you kidding me? Because he could have been gone. Previous books could have been out of the picture. Only the mercy of others has him even around. It was frustrating.
Let's go a step further. Multiple times in the last couple books, he'd been showing that he was loose cannon, a little too hot-headed. His own partner was saying, dude, watch your trigger discipline. Get your finger off the trigger.
Yep, that's what I said a few minutes ago. It was foreshadowed right there, that trigger discipline thing. So, yeah. So what do you think? When does Murphy come back?
She doesn't.
You don't think so? Because it's been pretty foreshadowed. She's going to go Valkyrie now.
Yes, but if you read directly what it is said, she is coming back as one of the Einherjar Valkyrie-like whatever. But the rules around that are you can't come back while someone with your memory is there. So at least not for a while, unless
I'm just predicting
one eye breaks some rules.
The rules are going to be broken. I'm calling it. Absolutely.
She'll likely come back at some point. Yes, you're right. But it needs to be a while, or else what's the point of stating the rules in the first place?
Now, there's two possibilities here. One, the rules will be twisted in that she'll come back, but like, her memory will be...
She doesn't know who she is, therefore it's not the same.
Right. She's allowed to come and still make a difference to be there, but yeah, doesn't know anybody. Although the real memories will leak in at some point, you know.
Ultimately, at this point, the Murphy-Dresden thing, it finally got to kind of happen, and then we can let it go to the wayside, she's gone, which clears the stage for...
Yeah, there's a reason.
Laura Dresden.
Wow, he just calls it Laura Dresden. You think she'd take his name? Come on.
No, I just am calling Harry Dresden. I was just putting it together. But the point being, that is something that like wasn't necessarily on my bingo card for the year, but I did see it coming as we were building towards it, especially in Peace Talks, and go, you know, that's going to happen. That makes sense. And it's, yeah, their history is complicated and there's some back and forth, good and bad. But some of the key points of pointing out, like Lara going, hey, yeah, no, I can't always control whether or not I have my whole attraction thing going on, which quite literally is Lara basically saying, yeah, if I'm really attracted or turned on, sorry, oops.
Yeah.
She's got a thing for Harry. And Nora she has for a while.
Nora and Harry has had a thing for books and books and books. There's real history here. They've played up the sexual tension. She's, you know, just flirted with it and ha-ha. But, well, no, you could tell no, underneath more a little bit. She, yeah.
It's not just about sexual Harry tension. That kinda,
it attracts her and annoys her at the same time.
It is nice to see that it is not just the sexual tension and that there is something more there. And I think there's a really interesting possibility for a future dynamic between Laura and Maggie.
Possibly. I like to think that Laura likes Harry for the reason that he has never been afraid slash intimidated by her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's a very powerful woman, used to getting what she wants and doing so by power and threat, and never ever having to follow through, because everybody knows, don't mess with her. And he was never up for that bullcrap. He's just, no. He's his typical irreverent self, and he can back it up. And at times, he has really been there for her, where she's being her total powerful self, and things have gone badly, and he's been around to partly save her bacon. He's never had to fully do it because she can hold her own too, to an extent. So that partnership at times, at critical times in the story, I think has reinforced that, you know, she has an interest in this guy. Yeah, there's something special here.
I'm going to go a partial hot take and say that Laura and Harry are probably my favorite pairing for Harry throughout the series so far.
And I don't makes think that's a hot take.
Some of the most sense. Because it's a lot of the pieces of other relationships that Harry has had, but the good pieces of them, even as we acknowledge, yeah, there's bad stuff there, but what does she actually see in him that she's liking? She sees the parts that Murphy was liking, these parts where it's like, you're a good person underneath and what you really drive for, but she also has the cold analytical side that, like, why did Mab choose him as the Winter Knight? And there's more there that we don't know, but there's that cold, calculating, rational choice of this makes sense, while also respecting the power and what Harry is as a wizard. Well, I guess I should say warlock now.
I guess you should. Ramifications to come. Is this the start of, or the continuation of, a redemption arc for Laura?
I think that implies she needs one.
Well, she's not a vampire.
She's not a good character, but she's not a bad character. Like, when we look at her history of what she's done, it's heinous but not villainous.
So you're saying she's more of a lawful, neutral character? She follows her own moral code, but it's not necessarily a good or bad code.
We might go more neutral evil, just in the sense that the White Court, in its nature, is inherently seen to be kind of an evil thing, especially from the view of mortality. It's not good for mortals. But Laura's never really been on the side of mortals, and we've been looking at this from a mortal-centric view. White Court vampires don't choose to be White Court vampires, necessarily. They just are. And so her running the house and keeping it going and keeping that strength and trying to maintain stability is probably the best she can do, both for the supernatural world and for the mortal world. Even if it does mean, yeah, we are still doing our vampire succubus thing. Like, that is a part of who we are. That doesn't make them inherently the bad guys. It does make them inherently what mortals would consider monsters.
Let's talk about her brother Thomas. And Harry's brother, Thomas.
Thomas?
Rough road to hoe for him. Rough road to hoe.
Thomas has been manipulated and messed up too many times from a number of different people in the last, like, five books. He's got the short end of the stick for a while. Which is funny, considering we usually think Harry gets the short end of the stick. Nah, Thomas.
And to go way back, the root of the problems is Thomas's half-humanity. You know, his willingness to not just be a White Court vampire.
He wants to be
something
more.
Different. And that's where the root of his issues come from. What kind of lesson is that? Try to be a better man, and therefore you're screwed. If he just gave in and was fully a White Court vampire to the fullest, he wouldn't be having any of these issues, some might say.
Now, that's partially true. It's a little bit not, because after he got tortured by that nice little shapeshifter guy, there was a little moment where he was like going
dark for a while.
What's the point? We'll just go for this. And it didn't really help him.
No, it did not.
So it's hard to blame his humanity when trying to ignore it or sacrifice it didn't help the problem. At that point,
one could say he wouldn't have gotten to that point in the first place if he hadn't earlier been trying to turn away.
Yeah, but that's like saying we can blame something that I did in preschool for the fact that I live in Texas now. Is it technically true? Yeah.
Well, probably.
Is it objectively super, super true? Not really. And at the very least, there's more to blame than just one thing.
Okay. Any other favorite moments? Big highlights where you're like, that was pretty good. That's entertaining. Nah, not so much.
I mean, yeah, but not like things that super individually scream out at me. There were a lot of action-packed moments that just kind of kept going and were entertaining. It was nice to see Butters, but still isn't like, he is not so capable of himself still. He's way better than he used to be, and he's been training, but he's still him, and his most effective is just putting faith in his sword and the faith, because ultimately clearing a path for Harry through the chaos looked a lot like just swinging wildly and hitting everything, friend and foe. But the blade differentiates.
Oh yeah, it's not a problem if he hits a friend.
And so it's not that he's so skilled that he just only hit the bad guys. It's like, no, he just hit everything, and the good guys were fixed with it, and the bad guys were hurt with it. It was very nice, I would say, seeing that moment, though, when the knight stood up to Harry, and that the blade did hurt him.
Yeah.
Showing, hey, when you make dark choices, you are a monster, and it's not because you're embracing the winter mantle horribly. It's not because you're going super supernatural. That's not what's making you a monster. It's your choices.
But I appreciated that moment, that choice in writing, that Harry loses it. Harry is going to go dark wizard now, because god dang it, enough's enough. You just friggin' killed Murphy. I am not holding back anymore. I'm going to be what I could have been all along. I'm just going to finally let it out because you deserve it. And every last one of us has had moments like that in our life, you know, where we have had it and we're going to let someone have it.
We haven't all necessarily
we always hold back. That's most decent people always hold back. We have the ability to just lash out, strike out, and we choose not to, but we want to. And yeah, it makes sense. Harry was finally giving in.
We haven't all had the moment of, I'm standing right here about to kill someone. Like, we haven't all been that severe, but we haven't all also had to watch someone shoot the person we love right in front of us. So differences in severity are there. We can still relate in the way that you're saying.
It also, for me, raises up how much we should respect Harry Dresden over the course of the entire series, where he's had this sort of ability. I mean, he hasn't been the Winter Knight all along, but he's had massive abilities to screw people up royally and has always, for reasons, chosen to hold back. Now, some could say, well, he didn't want, the wardens to cut his head off. But other wizards have made choices to just go off and do what they want, and he has never chosen to. He's always shown restraint. And just, recognize that. Good job, Harry.
All of Harry's friends, especially in these last few books, have been very quick to tell him or question him and try to remind him that he's a good person. And he's doubted it throughout all of this, But it's not whether or not he doubts that he is a good person. It's he doubts whether he has the agency to continue being a good person. Which I just go back to Michael Carpenter, and I love him calling out the arrogance of, you are so you-centric that you think it's about, you have this mantle and you're going to be a monster.
This key moment, though, when his the knights stand up to him, you know, what is that really? It's friends helping him be his true self and not to go too far. And that's a key element of the entire Dresden Files. We are better than we will be by ourselves because of our friends.
There's a certain amount of symbolism of Harry being the island out at Demon Reach is a problem. When you're an island unto yourself, you isolate yourself and it perpetuates and gets worse. You get in your head, you get further down. You need that those connections. You need that network, that city around you.
Ooh, we're getting into deeper themes. Well done, Zach. But let's talk about Demon Reach. That island turns out to have a major payoff here. You know, again, been building this up. This is stuff Jim Butcher had put into place intentionally with this target in mind. I don't believe he had Battleground in mind when he wrote Stormfront. No, that was not. That was an experiment of a story.
He probably had it in mind when he wrote, oh, goodness.
It's been in mind Small for Favor? Many books.
Small Favor.
Maybe even before that.
It would have to be at least then, because that's the first time they're on the island.
Yeah, and it has to be before that, I think. But he's definitely, yeah, really aimed at this for a long time. And cool. All right. The ending. We've got that final then meeting that's happening like the next day, you know. And in my recollection, you know, Harry comes upon. He wasn't actually invited to the meeting, but he shows up at the meeting then.
He shows up anyway, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't invited because he's too human.
There were some nice things laid out there, but obviously the one big one is what we know the next book will be about now. You know, that, yeah, you and her, we're putting you together. See what? that was fun. 12 months is the name of the next book. And, you know, there's going to be this year that they need to spend.
It'll be over the course of 12 months or what happens after 12 months?
I don't think it's going to cover the whole 12 months, but I think it's going to be related to the 12 months. But I don't know. I have no idea, really. What do you think?
I think it's fair to say we'll probably be something in the running up to we're running out of time. It's almost been 12 months, and there will be like flashback scenes to things that have happened within the past 12 months as the story is going along. And they're trying to either stop or weasel their way out of or accept a marriage contract.
Okay. Now, you've read as far as I have. You haven't read in any of the short stories and novellas that go along.
Nah. Not going to, probably.
Probably aren't going to. There is one more thing, one major piece beyond book 17. And that's a novella, The Law. So 17.5. That you might choose to read. It advances the story a little bit and basically helping us see what Chicago has become now post-Battleground. It's a worthy read, and it's not that long, so I do recommend that one to you.
Well, and what a post-White Council Harry looks like. Which is a little funny, and like, yes, he's now unofficial, he's not supported. He wasn't really supported for a while, though. It's more, he is officially recognized as more or less an enemy of the council, as opposed to the black sheep of the council.
But what's key is Harry has grown beyond the council now.
Yeah.
He's an entity unto his own. He's part of the Winter Court. He, you know, he doesn't need them.
Well, and I will stand here, right here, right now, and say plenty of the wizards on the council beat Harry in a direct confrontation on neutral ground. You put Harry on Demon Reach with some funny little artifacts he's got there, he no diffs most other wizards.
Yeah. I think the writing that moves him out of the council like this now, out of the that break, will become very important for him being able to work to solve some of the problems in the council. There are still things in there. We've had issues already. Corruption has come out. That's not done yet. That's not gone. He'll be able to work at things, I think, more effectively because he's not restrained by it.
I'm going to take us long term and say where I think the end goal goes here is that we see something a little bit more like the council that we saw at the end of Battleground being a new Accords and new White Council. That it eventually becomes there isn't this White Council of Wizards watching over magic, but rather there is a more unified supernatural world that watches over things together. And I think there's a long road to get there. And it's bridging that gap between all these different supernatural forces that have viewed themselves kind of as opposing forces while the mortals are a completely other thing. And trying to, at the end of the day, bring all this together to a new normal is where I think we might be aiming for post-apocalyptic trilogy.
Yeah, could be. Any other predictions? That's a good one. But anything else flowing from what you've read so far?
I think we will get enough of a Maggie starting to try to learn magic. Whether she's successful or not, not sure.
And this is, again, where you're missing out because you haven't read some of the short stories. There's one called Zoo Day that really highlights there's more to Maggie than we realize. Okay, there's stuff there. So to make a prediction about what's going to come with her, yes, there's going to be something coming of Maggie for sure. So I concur. I don't know what yet.
I don't think this will happen, but I think there's a really cool opportunity to make like a YA series that is centered around Maggie and I forget the name of the little green knowledge spirit that birthed out of Harry's head.
Which is fantastic. Bob 2.0. What was her name? I'm blanking.
I don't remember it. But I'm there's a really cool opportunity for the adventures of those two to be like lower stakes fantasy things that go on in Chicago as a YA or even elementary school kid type of book series that introduces people to the Dresden Files world a little bit at a much younger age. So eventually you get a point where it's like, yeah, I read these books as a kid and well, this is where they come from. And then you get into the Dresden Files books. I think it's a great marketing opportunity that I don't know if it's going to happen.
Bonnie is the other spirit.
The Adventures of Maggie and Bonnie.
Yeah, Bonia or Bonia is the actual name, but nickname is Bonnie. Yeah, man, that was great. And you're right, that could be. What's so great about Zoo Days, which again is a short that you might actually enjoy because it gets some key pieces. It's simply a day that Harry takes Maggie to the zoo and Mouse comes along. So the three of them go to the zoo and stuff happens. But it's different stuff for all of them, even though they're all having the same day. And it's brilliant because it tells the story three times. First from Harry's POV, then from Mouse's POV, then from Maggie's POV. And so you see each one of them basically taking care of the other two without the other two ever realizing what's going on. It's fantastic. I recommend the story.
Yeah, real fast, is there anything in this universe of books that you don't recommend?
No, totally yeah, not.
That's where I was like, you recommend the story.
But
valid. But
some are more important than others. Okay, there are some that are just fluff, just enjoyable additions. But I don't say Zoo Days is. I think it adds key elements to understand, especially when you're interested in Maggie.
Yeah, you know, Skin Game, just fluff.
Shut up. no, there are still many plot hooks that have been laid out here that weren't all used up at Battleground. There's still more to come.
No, stuff the biggest that stuff enjoy. That's left just like open and undeveloped. What's going on with Nemesis? Where is this going? The eventual something that happens every like 666 years with the Starborn stuff, and whatever that's going to be.
Yeah,
that I expect is what we'll be gearing towards for the eventual apocalyptic trilogy that'll capstone this.
Very likely.
So I think we're just going to keep building and giving more pieces while we try to deal with this nemesis stuff in the meantime.
Yeah. Yeah.
But.
Oh, man. What was my thought that was just there? Oh, okay. So we don't know when the next book's going to come out.
Correct.
But you're definitely really interested now. I mean, you want to know what's going to happen in the story.
That's putting words in my mouth to a certain extent. The definitely really interested. No, like I could stop and not be that upset. That being said, you and I are both completionists enough that like, no, I'm going to get the next one when it comes out. I'm grateful for the fact that I get a bit of a wait. Like that feels bad, but it's like, there's a lot of other things that I want to read.
Sure.
And I'm going to enjoy having the space to go read those things now.
I'm disappointed, not in you, disappointed that you got through all of this and you still, don't feel as enthusiastic for the series as I do, but that's okay. Each of us has different preferences.
There are pros and cons to the series. I'll enjoy it, but I'm not going to ever enjoy it as much as you do.
One of our viewers was like, I don't know about this, Zach, not liking the Dresden Files, but still reading it. He's really plowed through these last books. I'm like, no, it's just he's on a mission. He wants to get it done so he can move on.
Well, pretty much. I mean, for the longest time with most, this series took me like 2 years or something. But it was because I was putting a book or two between each book.
Yeah.
For the last like six, I just read them in a row because I was like, okay, let's get these over with.
All right, I think that's enough talking about Dresden Files for now. Let's talk about just a few other things before we wrap for today.
Yeah, what's up?
What are we reading right now? I'm going to point out a few things. Down below there, I have started my reread of The Chronicles of Amber. So I'm on book one, Nine Princes in Amber by Roger Zelazny. Now, these Amber books are not long books. I'm doing them on audiobook, and this one's like just over 5 hours. So
for context,
not long at all. Yeah, that's the whole 10
book,
books right
this
there.
This is all 10.
Yeah,
exactly. It's one Stormlight Archive book to do 10 books.
But it's really good. I'm enjoying Nine Princes in Amber. Again, I haven't read it in like 40 years. But so just very faintly do I remember elements of the story. Therefore, it's a great reread because most of it feels new again. I'm like, oh yeah, the little details, they're not in my head at all. Really enjoying it so far. I also just finished, below me, Zombie Fallout 22, Bridging the Gap.
Many.
It
so
was
many.
Delightful, though. One of the better ones in quite a while. Not that I haven't enjoyed all the Zombie Fallout books, but this one, what was slaying me in this one is how he had characters in character relevantly dropping SFF references. Like the first one he does is a literal Rand Taviren reference.
Fair enough.
In the book. And it made sense. It wasn't shoehorned. And he references it, The Lord of the Rings. I mean, just so many different ones speckled throughout the book as the characters banter back and forth. I'm like, that's next level. So that was good. I'm currently reading above you there, The Fall of the Giants. That's an arc. It's pre-order right now for people. But Gregory Kantaxis, book two of The Dance of Light.
Nice.
I'm a third of the way through. And it's a nice continuation of the story. And yes, it's true. I'm still reading Duma Key. But this is not my fault.
How close are you to finishing that one?
I've got about 25% to go. But I would have had it done this month, except I'm getting new reading glasses. And so I'm without my reading glasses right now. Now, I can read on Kindle, and I can read on audiobook, but to try to read a paperback is hard right now. I have a backup pair of glasses, but for them to work, they're a different prescription. I have to hold the book, like, right here to read it clearly. That's not fun with a hard cover.
Just an understanding. As someone who wears glasses all the time, like, not just to read, why does you're getting new glasses mean you don't have access to your current glasses? Did you break them?
No, I like my frames. I didn't want new frames.
Okay.
So they have my frames. They're getting new lenses put into the same frames.
Okay.
Therefore, it was going to be about a 2-week turnaround that I have to work without the reading glasses. Like I said, I have a backup pair for, I've really got to read something close, but for pleasure reading on a hardcover book, it doesn't work so well. I'm also getting, oh, this is funny. One last real life thing. I'm getting prescription sunglasses because mostly for driving. I'd noticed I'm not the far sight. I'm not seeing as clear as I used to.
Mm.
So the eye doctor, you know, put me through all the tests and stuff and said, I see the problem. Your vision is 20/20. My vision used to be better than 20/20. And your mother has been giving me crap for years that I could see so well far away. And well, I can still see fine, but I'm getting prescription so I can see as well as I used to.
Yeah, it's not what you're used to. It's fine by everyone's standards.
Exactly.
Except for your own, because you hold yourself to a higher standard than a normal human being.
That's pretty much it. I want to be superhuman again. Yeah. And I do a lot of driving, especially for work. So I wear sunglasses when I'm driving all the time. Now I'm going to get prescription ones that just will work even better, be even clearer out on the road.
My problem with my glasses and driving is like I probably need a new prescription before too long because I think my astigmatism has gotten worse. So when I'm driving at night, any sort of light and stuff has big streaks more than it should. And I know that's an astigmatism thing, but it makes it real hard to see when there are cars coming at you.
Gotcha. Yeah. Oh, I've had that problem for years too. What are you reading?
Currently, let's see, I finished None of the Ninth. So I'm moving on to the next in the Farseer trilogy. Hopping back there for, I think that's Assassin's Quest. Okay. I don't know if it's Assassins or Assassin. I don't remember.
I haven't read those, so all right.
But there's that one. And then I still am like 2 pages into the Malazan, book 2.
A Dead House Gates.
That one. Because it's on my phone and I almost never read on my phone. I have to intentionally be like, I'm going to read this book. And I don't do that as much. But the last most interesting thing is after finishing Foundation, which I very much enjoyed.
Good.
A little bit surprising that I enjoyed considering it was written pre-1950 originally.
Uh-huh.
But it's great. Moving on to another more recent fantasy trilogy that has gotten a lot of buzz. A lot of people like it. Starting with the first book, Jade City by Fonda Lee.
There's a reason I'm laughing for that. That's on my TBR, of course. But, you know, on our YouTube channel, I started a recent thread of shorts. Dad jokes. I'm the dad of the episodes, you know, so I've been doing dad jokes now, all fantasy or sci-fi themed.
Correct.
Today's dad joke is on the Greenbone Saga. And it's
nice.
I think it's pretty good. So you'll need to go check it out. It's currently trending because I dropped it just before, you know, and I mean, some of these dad jokes are already at 3,000-4,000 views and still climbing. This is finally, people are loving it. And it's part of why we're over 1,000 now, because more people are finding our channel.
It's fun.
Through the dad jokes. But this one is on its upward trajectory right now. It's sitting at 282 views after just like, you know, 40 minutes. And it's going on up.
But no, I don't know whether or not like Asian style mafia is something I needed in my reading repertoire, but I think I'm going to enjoy that it's there.
Yeah. The you'll get this then, you know, the dad joke related to it was simply someone asked me what I thought about the Greenbone Saga. And yeah, I'm feeling a little jaded about it. But exactly. That's what dad jokes are all about. Okay.
I had to give you the reaction.
Thank you.
You earned it.
Anything else you want to talk about before we sign off today?
Keep an eye out for, at some point, we might talk, because I went and saw Dune 2 finally.
I have not yet.
You need to. It's good. Way better than the 80s version.
That's what they say. You know, I didn't watch Dune 1 until it came out on the small screen.
I think it's worth going and seeing before it gets out of theaters.
That's what they say, but man, that takes time. And that takes effort.
I do warn you, it is loud. So maybe you want to be able to control it at home, but your nice subwoofer will very much enjoy that movie.
Everything will be rattling in the house.
Yes.
All right. Good to know. Dune 2, recommended by the sun. All right. Well, then let's wrap. It's been good to talk to you, Zach. Thanks for going along the Dresden Files journey with us.
Yeah, and I'll keep going, but no rush to get the next book out. We're okay.
And you haven't read anything else by Jim Butcher, and this probably doesn't spur you to want to seek out his books necessarily, but he does have other things.
I may get there, but it's not like I am having a huge craving to need to read more Jim Butcher. Not yet, at least.
Okay. I have read his Codex Alera series, which I thought was pretty good. Not fantastic. It's epic fantasy, not urban fantasy, but it was pretty good. And his Cinder Spires series is what he's writing right now. And that's why we're not getting more Dresden Files. He's got two books out, and I think he's working on the third. I will check that out at some point. And it's a different kind of fantasy. Anyways, that's it. We'll let you go then, everybody. Thanks for watching. It's been fun. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
Hi there. Welcome to the Fantasy Files. Wow. What?
That's not us.
We're on the show. Let's try that again.